morning, everybody. Thanks for joining me on Minding Your Health, the show that helps you find ways to take back control in issues regarding your mental and physical health. I'm Roberta Fernandez, a board-certified hypnotist and a certified hypnosis instructor at the Fair Hypnosis Center in Eden Prairie. I use hypnosis to help people succeed when nothing else has worked, and I'm really excited to be here with you on Saturday mornings. Today, we're starting part two in our parenting series, and we're going to be talking about teens and parenting. I'd like to welcome my guest, Sarah Nguyen. She's a clinical social worker with a private practice in Chanhassen. She has 16 years' experience working with individuals, teenagers, and families, working with clients to understand how important the mind-body connection is. We talk a lot about that on the show, Sarah, in gaining self-awareness, focus, and support. So Sarah enjoys using a client-centered model, very solution-focused, to gain acceptance and a commitment for change and understanding. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm going to just kind of catch up some of our audience that might not have tuned in last week. You can find those shows archived on the AM 950 site or on the fairhypnosis.com site. Last week, we talked about being present and being building better relationships with our younger children. We talked about the development of the brain and why hypnosis is so effective with young children. Today, we're going to move into what can be trying times for many parents and for teens. Teens are very good at hypnosis. And as many teachers and parents already know, they easily go into light alpha trance. Most parents will say that's not paying attention. They're daydreaming all the time, right?
Right.
Teens are highly suggestible to everything other people say, especially their friends. And yes, still to parents. They may not want the parents to think that they're listening, but they hear it. So I want the parents to remember that teens are working really hard to develop their sense of self, to get distance from their parents, because that's what they're supposed to do. We're there to raise them and let them go, right? So they're ultra sensitive to negatives, but they still do take in those positives. And of course, this is the time of high drama, changing hormones, lots of new freedoms like driving. And it can be a time when teens are dealing with an incredible amount of stress, social situations at school, worrying about college, school itself, all the activities we have kids a part of. My gosh, my daughter had a bigger resume by the time she got out of high school than I did through half my career, right? And this can lead to a host of issues for them and their families, like acting out, anxiety, depression. So, Sarah, I want to start by talking about these most serious issues first, and then we can explore ways that parents can more effectively do some prevention and intervention.
Wonderful.
Sound like a plan?
That sounds like a good one.
Okay, good. So, how do you work with or for your child's feelings versus strategies for connecting with that anxiety and depression?
So that's a great question. I think a lot of the times it's about us stepping back and saying, my day-to-day as an adult and as a parent is rigorous and multitasking and really not stopping to take a breath. And so what is my child seeing on the day-to-day? And so I always talk to families a lot about what are symptoms, what's symptom education. I think a lot of young people hear the word depression and anxiety, and there's this stigma about what does that mean, what's wrong with me? And I think when parents hear that, there becomes this fear of what does that mean for my child and what does that mean for what I'm going to need?
Well, and those words, it's kind of like saying I need a Kleenex when you're really saying a tissue.
Right.
I know when clients come into my office, I don't diagnose, I don't treat, I don't cure. And so if someone comes in and says, I'm depressed, the first thing I say, is that a clinical diagnosis?
Right.
Because if it is, I need a referral. But a lot of people just mean I'm sad.
Right.
Or I have anxiety. Is that self-diagnosed? You know, it just means that they feel stressed sometimes, like normal everyday stress. So it's really important as parents to know the difference, right?
And I think deciding what a big emotion is versus the dramatic emotion.
So how do parents recognize, you know, when it's just that dramatic teen, because there is a lot of drama or when it's the real deal.
So I talk to parents a lot about listening more than you're talking. I think that as parents, I'm a parent, and I think our first thing is to fix it. And so if your child comes to you and says, I'm sad, I don't feel well, I don't want to go to school, what does that mean?
Right.
And instead of trying to give them solutions to what is going on, to sit back and ask, how are you feeling? How is your body feeling? Mm-hmm. What's happening in your environment? Yes. Did you have a big test? Are you worried about things? So being able to have a conversation with them that feels more adult-like sometimes,
right,
than fixing things.
Yeah, and it is our natural tendency as parents. Mm-hmm. We don't want our children to suffer or to experience bad things. But, mm-hmm. you know, that helicopter mom yes. kind of syndrome mm-hmm. can be really detrimental to our right. kids. Yep. You know, my history before I was a hypnotist when I lived in Florida, I founded a Montessori school, and we had three-year-olds to 12-year-olds. And you always saw parents wanting to just dive in, and they didn't want their kids to deal with adversity. That's when they need to have that practice, when the problems they get themselves in aren't the kind that brings the cops to your front door.
Exactly.
You know, handing in their homework, you know, big deal. Let them deal with the mm-hmm. consequences of right. those things. Let them learn to make better decisions.
Right.
We don't always have to be rescuing our children mm-hmm. because that it doesn't help them, does it?
No, not at all. And I think a lot of times I'll have families come in and they've referred the teenager, and then mom or dad are sitting in the sessions with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let that's fine for the first one to kind of information gather.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one, I really try to say, okay, now is your time to step out
mm-hmm.
and your teen's time to really come to the forefront and have a voice of yeah. what's going on. Because they'll talk and they'll
yes.
say things.
Yeah.
And I think I always talk to families about three things. So I'll say, are you being mindful mm-hmm. and showing your child how to be mindful?
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean to you?
So I think mindfulness is kind of a kitschy word.
It is.
Right now, everybody's mindful.
Everybody's
right?
using it. Yep.
But I think really what that means is, am I mindful of my environment?
Yes.
So am I paying attention to how I'm feeling when I'm in class? Mm-hmm. How I'm feeling when I'm leaving class? What are my sensory spaces when I'm in the hallways or in my room? How is my sleep?
Mm-hmm.
So for kids to be able, teens to be able to connect to being mindful of self and your environment doesn't mean doing yoga, which is awesome.
Yep.
That's not what that means.
No, no.
So connecting parents to that as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, we're all busy and mm-hmm. parents are really busy, but so are teens.
Absolutely.
I mean, they just have a lot of pressure, a lot of demands.
Right.
I see teens in my office for sports improvement mm-hmm. or, you know, working with a therapist because
right.
we do refer back and forth. And you're right. A lot of times when you sit and you talk to the teen by themselves, I had this recently. Mom came in all worried about her kid. And, you know, when I get that kid in there alone, they're like, no, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing wrong. And there isn't anything wrong. They're just being a normal 14-year-old,
right.
you know. But parents, and it's good, parents love their children, mm-hmm. but they jump to conclusions or they put their own feelings
right.
or experiences on their child. It triggers, mm-hmm. and I deal with triggers a lot in what I do. Parents are triggered sometimes by their children of things that happened to them.
Right.
And they can only relate how they processed it. Doesn't mean that your child's really feeling that way.
Right.
So a lot of times a child's goals may be very different than, or they think they're there for different reasons than what mom does.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes,
and you find
absolutely.
That same thing, don't
I
you?
I do. And I think a lot of the time too with anxiety, especially, or even depression, kids in their teenage years, they want to be autonomous. They want to be independent.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they're spending more time in their room, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
But
that's
a lot
their space.
That's their space.
Yeah.
But
how does a parent know? I mean, what are the specific signs? So mm-hmm. my kid's spending a lot of time in their room. Are they really depressed?
Right.
Are they in there cutting or doing
right.
whatever?
Mm-hmm.
What does a parent look for?
Absolutely. So what I tell parents is if a child wants to go or teenager wants to go in their room, if they're in their space and they're being productive, so they're in there doing homework, they're in there talking to friends, they're in there doing social media, those are things that they're wanting to be alone. They're wanting to disconnect and rejuvenate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If they're in there and they're sleeping excessively, they're in there in the dark, they're mm-hmm. in there and they're not coming out for hours on time, not coming to dinner, not coming down to get food, not connecting even when they come in or out from school,
mm-hmm.
or from work, those are things that you start questioning that there's probably something more going on.
Okay. And how do they do that without having the teen getting defensive?
Absolutely.
Because that's a typical reaction,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. And we talk a lot about that in my office. What I'll say to parents is if you're constantly asking, how are you? Are you okay? Is everything fine?
Stop drilling me.
That's what your teen's hearing, yep. is it's constant nagging. I hear a lot about, you're drilling me. You're not letting me have my time. And so I talk a lot about saying, let's have a clear dialogue. Let's compromise. If you're going to go in your room and you appear to me as a mom that you are a little down, you're sleeping a little bit more, can I ask you how you're feeling?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Can I ask a follow-up question for you? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to have some control given to the teen as well as the parent to have a safe or fair dialogue is really important. If they tell you they're fine and then they're in the room for hours, okay, then we get to have a conversation about that.
Right.
But how do you let the string go a little bit longer?
Yes.
And feel safe that they're telling you what they need to tell you while at the same time you saying, I feel safe enough to let that go for right now.
Right. And it really goes back to basics. What kind of relationship do you have with your child? Are you spending quality time?
Right.
I mean, even with young people or in my parenting class and that I talked about, it's about taking 5 minutes a day. That's it. To just be present, be mindful with your child, where your eyes are engaged and you're having a real conversation, not just, hey, don't forget your backpack, you know, or here's your lunch or whatever.
Right.
And you're doing a million things multitasking, right?
Exactly.
Awesome, Sarah. Well, we're going to be back in a moment. We got to take a break here. We're talking with Sarah Nguyen, a clinical social worker, and we're talking about teens and parenting. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Roberta Fernandez, and this is Minding Your Health. Today, we're helping you take back control by empowering you through education on how to parent through those teen years. We're here with Sarah Nguyen, a clinical social worker with a private practice in Chanhassen. Sarah, when we left, we were talking about how to recognize signs. Let's move forward a little bit in identifying the importance of visuals for organizing schedules and emotions. How do these things go hand in hand, schedules and emotions?
So as adults, schedules are very overwhelming.
Yes, they are.
We've learned to adapt.
Mm-hmm.
As teenagers, I think we're in a world where schedules are not what they were when we were teenagers.
Not at all.
They are rigorous. They are day to day. They are hour to hour. And so being able to help a teen identify, what do I need to do?
Mm-hmm.
What time frame do I have? And what is my threshold?
Right.
And I think a lot of the times that what is my threshold piece is more important than everything else.
How so? Tell me what you mean.
8 o'clock waking up, going to school, having classes back to back to back, and then doing an extracurricular activity to then come home to do homework, a project, go to bed late, and wake up and do it all over again.
Yes.
A lot of our young people are going to bed at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night and waking up by 6.
Yeah.
And by the time 8:30 hits, most adults are fried. Figure that your teen is 10 times that.
Right. And they've got 3 hours of homework left.
Absolutely.
And they've had basketball practice or, you know, choir or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's really interesting. One of the things I think we forget as parents is that we've had time in our lives to learn all of this.
Right.
Our teens haven't. They're like on the job training, right? And they have no life experience. And what you said just struck me. They are so scheduled, but it's all done for them.
Right.
Right. So when they have free time, they're not necessarily good managers of that time.
Absolutely not.
And they lose track of time or they waste time. And when they don't mean to do that, they just want a break.
Right.
Right? And because everything is so scheduled for them, they don't have that real life experience and practice of managing those things.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that was in that question was emotions. I don't see a lot of parents teaching their children about emotions, do you?
Absolutely not. No.
And this is critical.
Absolutely. And I think, too, it's critical for a life skill.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of young people will go from A to B to C. Mm-hmm. And there's this feeling internally, I'll hear a lot of young people say, I feel really tight. I feel really stressed. I feel really hot. Not connecting or being in tune to, those are signals to you to stop.
Yeah, they are. You know, a couple weeks ago, we had Roxanne Key. She's a massage therapist. Mm-hmm. And I always tell my clients, you know, you work in the conscious mind, Sarah. I work in the subconscious mind. Roxanne works in the body. Mm-hmm. And we're beautiful. And we talked about this on the show, how a talk therapist, mm-hmm. just to have the definition here, and a massage therapist right. is in the body. So how we go hand in hand, we work in a different part, but it's one big system and they're all connected.
Absolutely.
And I tell my clients, you know, the difference between the conscious and the subconscious mind, they don't communicate with each other. They're two different things. They do different jobs. The body is the connector.
Right.
The body is what communicates. So that consciously we know I'm scared because I just felt the hair go back up on the back of my neck, mm-hmm. right? So what you're saying is really, really important. And those emotions are critical for teens because they've got it coming at them from all angles, don't they?
Absolutely. And like you said, it's not being planned. And mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff for them is not in their control.
Yeah.
And as we know, anxiety is stress and not feeling in control.
Right.
So
right.
I talk a lot with the teens about schedules.
Okay.
So I tell them, look at your schedule like a magnet board.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to look at the things that you need to do, and they're flexible. We can spin them around and turn them as you will. I think a lot of the time we're taught young, do the hardest thing first.
Yes.
And then
wrong.
You do the – no, it's
wrong.
Totally wrong.
It's totally
Absolutely.
Wrong. Yep.
So I really promote for them, and they give me big eyes, looks of really.
Yep.
But I say do the easiest thing first.
Confidence.
Confidence.
That's right.
Gain your confidence, gain your momentum, and be able to slowly pace yourself.
Exactly.
And a lot of the times I'll kind of connect it to a video game, which at times in an age of social media,
oh,
maybe.
That's a good metaphor.
Right? But in a video game, you don't start out on the hardest level first.
Oh, you level up.
You level up.
That's right.
And so being able to help them connect to that of writing it down. I have this due in math. It'll take me 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I have this due in history. It'll take me 55 minutes. But being able to have them connect to control and then being able to feel better about, okay, I feel calm. I feel finished.
Yes.
I feel connected.
You know, and the other thing, too, is the human brain can only concentrate for so long at
Absolutely.
Once. And these kids come home with mountains of homework, and it's like 3 hours. Adults can't concentrate nonstop for 3 hours.
Right.
No one can. It's not good for you. You get
right.
fatigued. And I know one of the things that I'm doing, test-taking and studying skills and giving them hypnotic suggestion for that, one of the practical life things I recommend is set your alarm, you know, on your phone because they all have them. You need an hour to do this homework. Set it for 50 minutes because you know if you give yourself a week, it'll take you a week to do it.
Absolutely.
If you give yourself 3 days, you'll get it done in 3 days, right? So, and then I tell them in 50 minutes, it goes off, you'll be done. And for 10 minutes, go do something else.
Right.
Listen to some music. Go on Facebook or Instagram or whatever the latest is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then come back, set your alarm again for 50 minutes and you tackle the next thing. But give yourself a break.
Absolutely.
And because that also helps them with time management, doesn't it?
It does. And I think as adults, we start to not do that for ourselves.
Right.
And our kids get to see, well, mom or dad's not – they're multitasking, but they're not breaking. And then they're becoming stressed and they're becoming angry and they're shutting down. So that's their example.
That's right. They're modeling everything, right?
Right.
You mentioned something when we were talking about fringe times that are important for young people.
Mm-hmm.
What define that for our audience?
So the fringe times I think of as the small times during the day that we try to either put something quickly into or we're not paying attention to it.
Okay.
So I talk a lot to young people about passing times
mm-hmm.
or if they have a social skills time or they have a resource time. What are they doing during that time?
Okay.
Lunchtime, 15 minutes here and there. It's that small amount of time that they could stop and take a break, pay attention. Have I eaten today?
Mm-hmm.
Have I taken water? Have I connected to myself? Have I taken a breath?
Yeah.
Those are things, those are fringe moments that we forget about that could really be rejuvenation times.
Right.
To be able to reset and reground ourselves to then move on to the next task.
Yeah, I know. I teach all my young people self-hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize it takes 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It you know, you can multitask in the bathroom if you need to.
Absolutely.
At least for women, right?
Yes.
You know, it doesn't take that much time, but it is that moment when all that stress can be shut off.
Right.
And to give yourself that, you know, that just calm, relaxed feeling. Give yourself a couple of good suggestions, and then go on with your day.
Right.
So it doesn't have have to take a long time. But yet I see panic on young people when they say, "I have to do this 5 times a day."
Right.
Yeah. It's 1 minute. I'm just asking for 1 minute here at a time, but they are so scheduled.
Absolutely.
It goes back to that, right?
Absolutely.
Interesting. So there was another question about that. Oh, my, I just lost my train of thought here. Parents modeling, I think, is really important because we don't realize, I think, how much our teens are paying attention to us, are they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, so for parents, taking a look inside is really important. Sarah, when we come back, I want to talk to you about the mind body as a bank. I love that concept.
All right.
We're going to go to commercial break. We're here with Sarah Nuon, who is a clinical social worker in Chanhassen, and we're talking about parenting teens. Welcome back to Minding Your Health. I'm Roberta Fernandez here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and we're talking with Sarah Nuon. Sarah's a clinical social worker with a private practice in Chanhassen, and we're talking about parenting and teens. And you have I love how this metaphor is about seeing the body and mind as a bank. Explain that to me, Sarah.
So I talk a lot about things that teens can connect to.
Okay.
And I think money, when they start getting a job or when they want money from mom and dad, that's a good connection, right?
It is.
So I talk a lot to them about finding your body as a bank.
Okay.
What are you depositing day to day, hour to hour? What are you withdrawing in that same amount of time? And when they look at me, they kind of go, well, what would a deposit be?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, what do you think a deposit is? And they think about it a minute, and no one has any idea what that means. And I talk a lot to them about deposits are the things emotionally, physically, that we do during the day.
Right.
So are you feeding yourself physically? Are you drinking water?
Mm-hmm.
Are you stopping and breathing? Are you running from point A to point B, or are you walking? Those are all deposits that you're depositing into your positive energy bank.
Yeah.
What are you withdrawing? So is that doing a task, paying attention in class, doing a sporting event, coming home and doing homework?
Yeah.
And how are you depositing versus withdrawing? And I think a lot of us as adults are withdrawing more than we're depositing. And again, we talked about, we're modeling that for our young people.
We are, absolutely. And you can only give so much without replenishing that bank. I love that's a beautiful metaphor. And you're right. As parents, we again, we've had a whole lifetime of kind of figuring out what works for us. But our teens, you know, once they get into high school, middle school is getting more rigorous, but when they make that leap into high school, it's a huge change for them. And there are so many more demands. And as a parent, you know, we like to think that young people have all this energy.
Right.
And we're always saying it, right? Oh, gosh, if I just had the energy of, you know, I did when I was 15, right?
Right.
But the fact of the matter is not infinite.
Right.
And you pointed out earlier in the show, kids aren't getting the sleep they need, and they don't have the same sleep cycle that we do as adults.
Right.
So we disrupt that with school hours.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very challenging for them, doesn't it?
It does. And I think to be able for them to know, what do I need for myself? So my friend might not have the same schedule or the same amount of needs that I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in teen years, we're keeping up. We're trying to keep up with you know, what John's doing, what Alyssa's doing, whatever.
Right.
And not connecting to what is my need space.
Right.
And as adults, we kind of do the same thing because that's what we've learned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to be in tune to where we need to stop and say, today's not the day.
No. And, you know, somebody said to me once, and I love this, they talked about the idea of high school. Mm-hmm. When you ask a teenager about, or an adult rather, about their memories of high school, mm-hmm. they don't ever talk about what they learned.
Right.
They talk about the social aspect.
So true.
Because that is really when all of that's being formed, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That social aspect. And so we're teens probably, I mean, we do it as adults too, but teens are so aware of how they're fitting in or not. And that's a pressure, I think, as adults that we forget. looking back at our right. teens and maybe we could be more compassionate about, right?
Right.
So that leads us perfectly to talk about this idea of self-care for teenagers. Why is this so important for them to identify?
I think life skill is a self-care, I apologize. Self-care is a life skill.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we learn early what we need to do to stop and reconnect ourselves, that will be a forever life skill that we'll do in jobs, we'll do with families, in relationships,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to know what is self-care.
Yes.
So I talked a lot to families and parents about self-care for you might be going on a bike ride,
mm-hmm.
where self-care for your child might be laying on the floor quietly, not talking to anybody.
Right.
Or it might be playing a soccer game, or it might be going off with friends.
Mm-hmm.
But try not to put on what your self-care is onto your kids.
Right. Because, you know, we always think our kids are like us, and sometimes their needs are exactly opposite.
Absolutely.
I learned that. I was fortunate to learn that as a new parent. When my daughter was three, actually, she would just have these outbursts of tantrums. Like, she'd have friends over, everything was going along fine, and all of a sudden she'd explode.
Right.
And what I realized was that she was exactly the opposite of me. When she got overwhelmed with people, with her expending her energy, mm-hmm. she needed time to go off on her own.
Right.
For me, I get my energy from people.
Yes.
I'm the most crazy when I'm home alone, quiet, right?
Yeah.
I'm exactly the opposite.
Right.
And I don't know what made me realize that in her, but we ended up working out this little thing. You know, when your friends are over and you feel that feeling coming, just let mommy know, and I'll entertain your friends, and you can go. I put books in the bathroom.
Right.
So she could just go sit in there and look through a couple of books and come out, and then she was re-energized.
Right.
And she didn't have these explosive times. But our teens are no different, are they?
They're not at all. And I think with that example, it's you taught her or showed her that it's okay to be able to say,
right,
I need that time, even with other people.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that you're being antisocial. I think all these words come up. And as parents, we're not trying to label or put words into our children's mouths or their belief systems, but it happens.
Right.
And so I think the example you're giving, I had one the other day with my daughter,
mm-hmm.
where she was done. She didn't want to go into her dance class. And I started trying to kind of figure out a way to get her there, but started panicking.
Right.
And I think as parents, that's what we do, is we panic and then we start putting words and labels on things. And our children learn that self-care does not equal being able to have a voice.
Right.
It equals having to, even when we don't want to.
Exactly.
And it's really uncomfortable.
And so that's a great segue into the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. How do you work with your child to identify their own autonomy, their right. own self and independence? You know, someone told me as a new parent, it was just a great piece of advice. From the day that they're born, we're raising them to leave us.
Absolutely.
And I think we lose sight of that as parents. I know, my daughter's 26 and she lives far from me. And there are times when I think, wow, you know, I never dreamed that there would be a time in my life when I'd only see her twice a year.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk every day, but, mm-hmm. you know, there's a difference. And
right.
so as parents, we want to hold on to that for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
But that's not necessarily in the best interests of our children, is
right.
it?
Right. No. And I think the helicopter parent that you talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
we think we're doing good by being overly supportive
mm-hmm.
and by really catching when they're falling.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think of a bird, the mother bird kicks the baby out of a nest, and if they fall, they fall.
They fall.
If they fly, they fly.
Yeah.
And that's a different analogy. But I think to be able to say to a parent, a child's autonomy is that they're able to learn skills and belief systems and responsibilities to be able to support themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's not being disrespectful.
No.
That's not being sassy.
Right.
It's being able to have a voice and make a decision in a way that's navigated appropriately
mm-hmm.
so that when they're 20, 21 and they're leaving, or 18, let's hope, that they can make good decisions and good choices that moves them forward in life.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, the time to start that was when they're very young.
Absolutely.
Allow them to make mistakes.
Right.
Allow them to make choices and whatever the consequences are to deal with those consequences.
Yes. Yes.
Because, you know, the seriousness of those things comes much earlier than it did when I was young.
Right.
You know, teens are faced, you know, I remember my daughter telling me one time, she was in high school, the mother's words coming out of my mouth saying, right. I remember when I was your age, right?
Right?
And she just looked at me with all the love. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been very fortunate. I worked really hard to have a good relationship with her. But she said, Mom, I'm sorry, but I don't think things are like they were when you were young.
Right.
And, you know, she's right. And I said to her, you know, you're right. You're dealing with things that I didn't deal with till I was in my 20s, mm-hmm. in middle school and in high school.
Right.
The scary thing is that they're not any emotionally more mature.
Exactly.
You right. know, they may be cognitively more mature,
yes.
but not emotionally equipped to handle and to have the life experience
right.
yet. You know, we were broken in a little bit more gradually. Our young kids today are tossed in the pot, man.
Absolutely.
And it's sink or swim for them.
Yep.
And I think as parents, we have to be really, really careful. And I do want to touch on the disrespect part.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, I mean, I'm a lot older than you are, so that's a different meaning for me.
Mm-hmm.
But any kind of feedback from our child that
right.
isn't along with our views,
yes.
some parents would consider disrespectful.
Right.
Can you just chat about that a little bit?
Yes. I mean, that's exactly it. Anything that's outside of what we believe
mm-hmm.
as parents is seen as disrespectful. And I have a lot of parents that'll come in and say, you know, this philosophy of having a compromised conversation with my child, I'm the parent, they're the child, I'm not going to do that. And I say, that's okay. That's a belief system you have.
You have, yeah.
But understand that then you're teaching your child not to be able to share with you,
mm-hmm.
good or bad, and give you information to be able to have a dialogue back and forth where you then as the parent can explain, this is where I'm coming from. This is not me putting my finger down and saying there's no other way.
Right.
And so I have a lot of parents say, well, if I do that, they're calling the shots.
Oh.
Which – you can believe that.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes our actions, however, we can say what we want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Often, though, our actions turn it the opposite direction.
Yes.
And so our kids walk away feeling confused of, you're saying one thing.
But I don't see that.
But I don't see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so how can I listen
mm-hmm.
and not talk so much to kind of get some feedback from my child that looks like a compromise, but instead it's more of a dialogue where we're engaging to know each belief system and where we can meet in the middle.
Yeah, and I know one of the things I talked about in last week's session, we were talking about parenting young children. There's a great book. It's called Redirecting Your Children's
yeah.
Behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, Catherine Kroll's is the author. She talks about always giving a child choices
right.
as a young child. They're choices that you want
yes.
that are acceptable to the parent, but it teaches them and it gives them practice
right.
with how to make choices and to deal with that. Because if we are those really strict parents that don't allow that for our child, they never learn.
No.
And you know, I used to tell parents when I had my Montessori school, you know, are you going to call your child's boss when they're in their 20s and say, oh, Johnny can't come in today because he's sick or he has a little headache.
Right.
Yeah, no, you're not going to be there for them. The first time they're at a party without you and
right.
there's drugs, mm-hmm. if you've been making all those decisions, they don't have the confidence to do it by themselves.
Right.
And right. that's the last thing that you want as a parent.
Right.
So allowing them that opportunity to have that autonomy is really what you're saying.
Absolutely. And to have those conversations that feel uncomfortable as a parent.
Mm.
But remembering back to you were at that place at one time.
Right.
And how did you want that conversation to go with your parent?
Right. Yeah.
And to understand that.
Yeah. And that is very important because it really is. Parenting isn't about being in control.
Absolutely.
It's about allowing your child to learn how to control their own lives.
Absolutely.
In a way that's beneficial for them.
Yes.
Yeah. Great, Sarah. We'll be back at just after the commercial break talking more about parenting and teens with Sarah Nguyen. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. This is Roberta Fernandez, and we're here at Minding Your Health. We're talking with Sarah Nguyen. She's got a private practice in Chanhassen, and we're talking about parenting those teens. Sarah, when we left, we were just kind of finishing up on this idea of independence versus disrespect. So let's talk about setting expectations and clear boundaries early on. What do you think about all of that?
I think it's really important, especially when kids are at the age where they are able to connect to those things.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to find a clear expectation of your house. What are your house boundaries? So what are you okay with as far as playtime, parent interactions, friends, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Moving it forward into teen years, what are you okay with with those same things as the kids get older? And being able to look at non-negotiables and negotiables within your expectations and boundaries. I think a lot of us as parents, me included, say, well, nothing's negotiable. I'm the parent.
You're right.
You stop and think. Yeah. There are things that are negotiable. Mm-hmm. There are things we learn to pick our battles with our children. And there are things that we have to stop and say, they are learning from that, and I need to let them learn from that. The expectation is that you're respectful and you're thoughtful. You have a good value system. You're a good person, mm-hmm. in quotations. But when you leave here, you're going to make mistakes. But you still get to come back in, and the expectation is we're going to talk about it and come up with a scenario that is helpful and supportive.
Right. And I think a lot of times when I look at parents, I mean, I was out the other day and you know, we were talking about modeling for our children, mm-hmm. and this lady is dragging her kid through the Target parking lot, and right. You could tell it was almost lunchtime. Mm-hmm. The kid was probably hungry. Who knows how many stops that mom had made before.
Right.
And she's literally dragging her because mm-hmm. she wasn't walking fast enough.
Sure.
And she had little bitty legs, right?
Right.
And the little girl she fell. Mm-hmm. Go figure. And she starts crying and screaming. And, you know, right away, the mom became aware that I was near. And then you could see the embarrassment set in and, mm-hmm. you know, stop it, stop it. And it mm-hmm. was like, wow, why don't you check and see if your child is hurt first, number
right.
one.
Right.
But again, it is this awareness of not just our needs as a parent. Mm-hmm. And so that piece about modeling, about taking a moment and being mindful and present, and those boundaries are really important. But you mentioned detachment from that, and that is where I think parents have a really hard time. We, you know, we love that little baby,
right.
and we watch that little baby grow up. And on one hand, we know that they are becoming an adult, but on the other hand, they're still our little babies, right?
Right? Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard for us as parents to detach. I mean, I look at my daughter, she's 26, and I'm thinking, wow, how did that happen? And she's a woman. She's mm-hmm. grown. And I find myself when she calls and she's had a tough day, again, going into mom fix-it mode, right? She doesn't need that from me. Right. She doesn't want that from me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens in our teens. That's when that process starts, right? So how does a parent detach from that way and still love their child?
Right. Right. And I think that's where those non-negotiables and negotiables come into play.
Okay.
So I think you're right. When a child or teen comes home and they say, this is what's happening at school.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I experienced. This is what my friend said happened to her. These are the scary things going on or worrisome things that I hear as a parent. Our instant reaction is to go into the have nots, the don'ts, instead of stopping and listening and saying, okay, let's look at that mm-hmm. and figure out how I can listen without giving an opinion. I'm fearful, but I'm not going to go there right away with my child because I want that dialogue to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to say right away that I'm not going to say no, I'm going to stop myself and listen and look at how this is going to help them move forward in life.
Right.
So that detachment is I'm going to hear you, I'm going to detach from my first response, and I'm going to listen.
Yes.
Which is really difficult.
It is very difficult.
Absolutely.
I know with my daughter, she would get very defensive
yes.
as a teen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not listening to me. You're
right.
not hearing what I'm saying.
Right.
And so I learned, again, through trial and error, but mm-hmm. I did finally learn to say, wow, you know, do you want my opinion on that? Are you looking for advice or do you just need to talk about it?
Right.
And I would just ask her what she was really, why was she really telling me this? What did she need from me?
Right.
And then she learned that if she said, I want your advice, well, okay, that's what you're going to get.
Right. And that you're hearing that.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And I think sometimes that is all they want is to be respected.
Right.
For their opinion.
Right.
I work with a lot of teens on confidence in how to have confidence to talk to their parents. Because what I see is that teens will just shut down.
Right.
It's not worth it. It's not worth the fight. That's what I hear. It's just not worth it. I'm just not going to go there.
Right. Well, a lot of the time, I think our teens, they're wanting to kind of feel out where they are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a lot of young people coming in and saying, I'm making this choice or I'm wanting to make this choice. And if I say it in kind of a statement sentence,
right,
instead of a question or that I'm going to, parents go straight to, you will not because of A, B, and C.
Right.
Where the teen is saying, well, I'm just telling you I would like my nose pierced.
Right.
I'm telling you I think it looks cool. I'm not saying I'm going to do it.
I'm going to do it. Right, right.
So being able to listen and connect to, I hear you and that's what you think is great.
Right.
I'm going to detach from the opinion I have to push that in a way that seems like I'm not hearing where you are at as a person.
Right. And I think for parents, it's just easier to parent in an authoritarian, because we don't have to engage.
Right.
We don't have to do that. That's what you're talking about is hard.
Right.
It requires taking time to be with your teen.
Right.
Right. And I also hear parents use, well, they're a teenager now as an excuse.
Right.
So that they can step out of that.
Right.
And I think that kind of circles us back to those contradictory messages that you mentioned earlier.
Absolutely.
That our words are one thing, but our actions are definitely communicating something else.
Absolutely.
So we're getting short on time here, but how as a parent do you, I don't know, if there's one last piece of advice, let's do it that way.
Yep.
What would you give to parents parenting teens?
I think there's a power in observation and not going straight to, my girlfriend told me the following about her teenage son, and so that's where I'm going with my teenage son. Being aware that your child is responsible, they're connected, they're going to their day-to-day activities, and if there's a time during that week that they're maybe not following through, be open to, this is a space where they get to have that.
That's right. They're not perfect.
They're not perfect.
And neither are you as a parent, right?
Exactly. And you're building. They're building.
Yeah. Yeah, they're learning. It's getting that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, this has been awesome. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
You can contact me at 612-524-9195 if you'd like to set up any consultation.
Do you have a website?
I do. Or? Yes. It's www.jadecounseling.net.
Awesome. Sarah, thank you so much for being here on our show today. I'm Roberta Fernandez at the FAIR Hypnosis Center. You can find me on fairhypnosis.com. That's F-A-R-E, hypnosis.com. Next week, we're going to continue our parenting series with part three. Our guest next week will be Ann Byrne of Byrne Law and Aaron Kassebaum with Mediation Divorce Services. We're going to be talking about parenting young children through divorce. Can be a sticky wicket there, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to wish all of our listeners to have a mindful week.